podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Nakamura, here's Scott Brown, teed up here for Caldwell, saved by Dina, should be on there, it is McDonald for Celtic. They look to have grabbed the win where it didn't look possible. Scott McDonald, his first game here at Parkhead in the Champions League, his first goal, and Milan are on their knees.
It's Monday at 10 a.m. What's the deal with that? Do you have to take this on annual leave? Do footballers get annual leave?
No, the good thing is where I'm at now with Dundee United, it's a long way to go. I travel because I'm still based in Glasgow with the kids and everyone here. We've been settled here for 10 years, so managed to give me the Mondays to do my individual work. So,
What is your individual work on a Monday then, Scott?
Well, just I'll go to the gym or I'll go for a run. I've got heart rate monitors and everything like that, so I basically just have to get up to a certain, probably about 80% for a good period of time, and do your bits and bobs, and then and that's you. Then give them it the next day, and they'll check and make sure you actually did it.
And you having to do the school runs and all that now?
Yeah, especially now that obviously I'm travelling so much up and down. It's nice to still, obviously, because I was quite fortunate when I was at Motherwell that everything was just around the corner. You don't realise that when it's on your doorstep, but it's great. There's a new challenge, something different for me, and you know, a little bit like, I know we're going to talk about Celtic, and that's why I chose Dundee United, in terms of where they're at right now as a Championship club. They are the big hitters in the league itself, and I felt I wanted to have something of similarity of what that was like at Celtic, which brought the best out of me and fulfilled a lot of enjoyment. So in terms of, that's what I'm looking to do this year, and hopefully we can win the title there. It's all about winning things as a footballer, especially even more so when you get older, rather than the financial aspect of it. So hopefully that will be the case this year. And you know, not to say I'm going to be finished after this year, but it'd be nice to have finished with something, you know, at the end of the career.
And I'll touch on the end of your career later on, but I wanted to talk about a wee bit before your Celtic career. Now, you know it's coming.
Yeah.
Everyone's asking about this.
Yeah.
Every single level you've been at now, in every platform.
Yeah. I don't think there's too many stories left to tell about that now, but we can try.
It'll be very, very quick, because what I wanted to always know, you scored the first goal and you made it one each against us, but there was a second one and it sticks out in my head so much because you had all the time in the world to pass to Jerry Britton.
Yeah.
You could have squared it and you didn't. Now, as a professional football player, obviously you want to do your best for yourself and your club.
Mm-hmm.
See, when you didn't pass that to Jerry Britton though, and you dallied so long in the ball, but yet you had a shot and deflected it in, was that a delaying tactic by you, or?
No, not really. I just think when you're younger, especially, you don't tend to play with your head up a lot. I really should have cut it, there's no question, but Jerry Britton still says to this day he still would have ballooned over the bar, you know. And that's coming from him. So you know, he said it straight after the game. It was quite funny, but at that time I only had one thing in my mind, and that was to try and beat the guy and score. And it got a heavy, heavy deflection, which at the end of the day, we all know the rest of the story. And to be honest, there's been a lot of questions asked of that day, and why did you do this, why did you do that. You really don't know what's going on. It's crazy moments. And for me, it was a defining moment, wasn't it? You know, it was a defining moment in my career in terms of the pathway it generated. Whether or not people would agree with that, but would I have wore the green and white after that? I don't think I would have. Mm-hmm. So from that perspective, for me, everything happens for a reason.
And everyone's heard the stories about, I think about your father-in-law not speaking to you for a week, your grandfather at the CSC.
Yeah.
Was there any, like, did you get any heavy abuse at all after that, or?
No. Yeah, of course you get things here and there on the streets, or look, people are very passionate. There's not a day that goes by still that someone doesn't want to mention that infamous day, whether you like it or not. But I suppose, from a perspective at least, I'll always be remembered for something, I suppose. You know, whether it's good or bad or indifferent. But if I had a pound for every time someone mentioned it, I'd be a very, very rich man, that's for sure.
I thought it went on with an answer, but I will move on. In January 07, you were still in Motherwell, and Rangers bid, I think, 350k for you. Yeah. That was rejected. And then in March, Celtic doubled that.
Yeah.
And you signed a pre-contract, and you'd be a Celtic player that summer. But what was the... Is there anything at Celtic that sold you on the move? Because at the time, Rangers were probably just on their level, and was it a 50-50 at the time if you had the choice?
Nope. It was one conversation and one conversation only with Gordon, and that was it. And it was basically that we're not going to mess about with, because we know Rangers are interested in you. And it was really odd at the time, because you don't really get a lot of transfer dealings that get done in March.
Mm-hmm. This, ever.
You know, ever. It was a deal that was done because I wasn't out of contract come the end of summer. I still had 18 months left running on the contract. So the deal was all agreed in principle and done, signed and sealed, you know, at the end of March,
yeah.
Which is really odd. So I had the conversation, whether or not rightly or wrongly, with Gordon at the time, and it was like, you need to make a decision now. We're not going to mess about, we're not going to get into a bidding war, this. And I was like, where do I sign? One conversation, I knew where I wanted to be, and everyone would probably say, well, that's a bit crazy, isn't it? You know, because we didn't even talk finances. I wasn't even caring, even at the time before that with the Rangers thing, it wasn't about the financial. At that time as well, you've got to look at it from my perspective and say, well, is there an opportunity that I'm going to go and play for Celtic? Probably not. After that infamous day, you're thinking, well, that's done and dusted. You've only got one option then. You know, if you want to go and, you know, play for a big club like that, then obviously there was a lot of things that I did want to go to Rangers at that time for those reasons. But as soon as the window shut, it was head down again, work hard, and then got the phone call from John Park, first and foremost, to say, you know, they're interested. Would you? Of course, Gordon will be in touch. Right, bang. And it was one conversation, and one conversation only, and it was like, get the agent on the phone, get the deal done. And the deal was done within a week, you know, and I was just elated. And even though Motherwell were a bit upset at the time, because I think we were pretty much in a relegation battle at the time, and Maurice Malpass was the manager. And Happy Mo wasn't happy.
But he did get a good business from Celtic, financially at least.
Yes, yeah, well, exactly. You know, I think back then as well, it was quite a heavy bit of money. So I think from their point of view, it was a good deal all round. But obviously as a player, I wasn't really concerning myself with the other things. I just wanted to get it done for me, and it was a dream come true, really.
Was there any doubts that you had about the move at the time? Not any at all?
No, none whatsoever. I think people know my character or see my character out the pitch. Actually, the doubters was something that I probably look forward to more than anything, because it brings the best out of me, or it brought the best out of me. You know, people that were wanting to, you know, let's be honest, I was brought to Celtic as a backup. Realistically, my thoughts, probably the manager's thoughts at that time, all the fans' thoughts at that time was just another, we just went and bought another SBL player as a backup. He'll do alright if we need him, you know, but my mentality is, before I even walked through the door, was that wasn't going to happen. I was here to make a statement and put myself out there. If I could score 15, 16 goals for Motherwell, what's stopping me from scoring even more with a club, you know, like Celtic and the players that they've got? So, you know, right from the word go, it just really went well. You know, I was in the off season, obviously I had a lot of preparation mentally to get myself right physically, because I did sign in the March time. So I was raring to go once I come back, and don't get me wrong, that was when you walk through the door and you see the likes of some of the big players out there. Jan was there, Magic Zaroski was still there, Kenny Miller was still there, you know, and then you had the likes of Tommy Grunson, Yuri Jausic, Premiership players, play for Real Madrid, Nakamura, obviously you could keep going on and on and on, but it was just like, I've arrived, you know. So, and I didn't really look at it from a point of view that, well, these are a lot better than me. I looked at it more from the point of view, I'm a good player, but these guys are going to make me even better.
You can improve.
Yeah, and that was my mentality, attitude towards it. And I think the reason why I was successful, which I think sometimes a lot of players aren't, in terms of especially centre forwards for being at one of the old firm, is I simplified everything. Mm-hmm. I didn't try and make things too difficult for me. All I did was give it to better players than me and get in the right areas, and that's how I scored my goals.
It was actually turned out to be the second time that you were managed by Gordon Strachan.
Yeah,
at Southampton as well. What was the major differences being managed by him at Southampton?
Well, it's kind of crazy because we didn't. I wouldn't say we didn't get along because I was a young boy, so I didn't. It wasn't really a case of that. But when someone releases you, you're not going to, like him. He's not going to be on your Christmas card list, and certainly Gordon wasn't. That's for sure. I just believe that he dented my confidence and didn't give me belief and didn't believe in me at the time. At Southampton, I'd made my Premier League debut under Stuart Gray and had a good success there, and I was flying. And I, obviously, as you do as a young kid, you think you've arrived, you think you made it. Then the whole world comes crashing down. He came in as the new manager. The team was struggling at the time, rightly enough, and he went with experience, which now is an experienced campaigner. You can see why you would do such a thing. I was still in and around the squads and this and that, but. At the end of the day, he felt that it was best for me because I now had the opportunity to play in the first team that I needed to get away from Southampton. I needed to go and be a man, which I agreed with. Unfortunately, the loan deals just never materialised or worked out the way it could have done. It was a hard time, disappointing time for me, but I think that more or less helped me in my pathway and sort of gave me that strength of character to go again and again, because it was dark times after I left Southampton for a good period there, jumping from Wimbledon to Bournemouth to having trial at Dundee United, didn't really like it, ended up back down to England, and then coming up to Motherwell and never looked back, which was great. But the conversation went with Gordon at the time, that conversation that I talked about was, would you have a problem working with me again? I was like, hell no, let's just get it done, because at the end of the day you're ringing me, and not a lot of managers I feel would do that. So I said a lot about Gordon himself for me, that he was able to put that to one side, not to say that he made a mistake, because he would generally say it wasn't a mistake either, just at that time you were a different player. He felt that I'd matured, was much more respectful and aware of my teammates around me, and a lot of other aspects as well. He'd been watching me for 18 months, obviously as Celtic manager, seeing me mature, and wanted me to become part of Celtic Football Club and never look back.
You said a few minutes ago there, your persona and your attitude on the pitch, and some people might not be able to take to that. I'll be honest with you, right, Scott? As a season ticket holder at Celtic Park at the time, I was one of the people constantly irritated when you were up front, and it was simply because I think a lot of the time when you were up front, people would often say you were quite moany, quite shouty and everything. And the stands, I was saying, oh, fuck's sake, McDonald, because of your own field sort of persona at Celtic at the time. Was that something that, did you have to develop that at the club though, or had you always been that way for your career?
I've been like that since I was born, I think. I'll be honest with you. My persona on the pitch and how you see it is completely 100 times different from off the pitch. Yeah. I'm very easygoing and very relaxed, easy to get on with. Just when I get that white line fever, I just want to win that badly. I hate losing at anything. If I lost, it's still to this day, if I lose in training, the whole day's ruined. It's completely ruined, And I think a lot of players are like that, but yeah, look, there's things that when you're young and as well that if I could I would change. Your body language sometimes can be wrong, but you're doing it for the right reasons. It's not ever for the wrong reasons. But yeah, if you want to play a game with the support or everyone else, yeah, I should have changed that. But in terms of me being me, that was me, just me being me, I suppose, and a little bit of experience at that time as well, that sometimes your body language can say a lot in terms of when fans see that as well. So from that perspective, I can understand why people got annoyed. That's for sure. And my teammates, don't worry about that. But to be fair, it was a great group at Celtic, and everyone put a demand on each other, and if there was anywhere I felt more than comfortable being able to express myself like that, it was certainly in that changing room, because everyone obviously dug each other out at times, and I thought that was a fantastic thing that people could, and then 10 seconds later it was done with, you know, we walked on, you know, whereas a lot of, in football today certainly doesn't happen. It's a very how can I put it, it's a little bit more touchy now, so it gets a bit more personal with the kids these days. Society's changed, and you have to be more aware of their needs and what, you know, type of personalities there.
Have you personally noticed that at Dundee United, or do you lead by example a bit more now, or are you still quite moaning on the pitch?
I'm still quite moaning and demanding, there's no question about it. That whole persona, I don't think you can ever change it. It sort of gives you your edge as well. I think once that stops for me, I think it'll be time to retire. That would be more or less sign to say, well, enough's enough, because if you're not really there wanting to do the things that you've always wanted to do or want to win that badly, then for me, I'm not going to be wanting to play anymore. It's as simple as that.
And also, about 10 years ago as well, on a lot of Celtic forums, I think when Celtic were going through a bad spatch in 07-08, we'd lost 3-0 at Ibrox, and I think the last 16 qualification was in the balance as well. It was before the Shakhtar game, anyway, around about November. I think you get highlighted and criticised on these message boards, and there were rumours about yourself being a grass or being a dressing room mole or a leak. And is that something you were ever aware of? Had you heard about these rumours?
I heard about it later on. It made me laugh. Like, in terms of, realistically, I guess things grow arms and legs, but people put one on one together. And I know where the stories have come from, because to this day I've still got a very good relationship with Keith Jackson at the Daily Record. Now, that relationship goes back to well before I moved to Celtic, in terms of we had a relationship up to the point where obviously that day happened, and we kept a very good friendship, and to this day still I'm still very friendly with Keith. But guys, come on, to think for a minute, do you think that Peter Lowell or Gordon Strachan don't have enough clout to know that if something like that was going on in their change room, that I would have lasted 2 minutes? Of course it wouldn't. So people can say what they want and put one on one together because they see me and Keith Jackson going out for dinner. But the other thing is as well, if stories are coming out and getting put into the press, and then I'm walking in the door with all my teammates the next day, how do you think it would sit? It wouldn't sit very well. So it's complete and utter fabrication and nonsense. Now, I know exactly where the stories are coming from, but can I tell you where they're coming from? Probably not, I can't, right? Because we all knew as players where they came from and what was happening. And obviously, at the time as well, I was like, with Keith Jackson, what's going on? Like, where are you getting these stories from? He wouldn't tell me. I never found out till later where the stories were coming from. But they certainly weren't coming from the changing room. They were coming from a source certainly outside, from a family member of other players, and the players didn't actually even know that they were coming from.
Did they find out later?
Yes. Yeah. They found out later.
Did that affect the player in question at all?
No, because he never found out. Like, I never found out till later. Okay. But look, everyone uses the media to their advantage, you know, when they can. Whether it's player, manager, football club, you know, things will come out. Now, whether or not it's a player or a manager or the football club itself, things like that do happen, whether it's at Celtic, whether it's Rangers, anywhere else. So people can think what they want, but I don't need to defend myself. I just laugh it off, because it's one of those things like, come on guys, you know, that if you thought that if that was really the case, do you think Gordon or Peter Lowell don't have enough clout within the game in Scotland and Scottish football to not realise or see things like that happening? You know, so at the end of the day, it's a non-starter.
One of the football battles now, Scott, and your first competitive goal was against Spartak Moscow, a memorable game, which that was now 10 years just last week. with an O. It wasn't your last in Europe. It goes against Milan and Man United as well. Out of all three of them, am I right in saying the goal against Milan is the one that will stick out long in the memory?
Yeah, I think for special, obviously, reasons, of course, will I score an easier one? Probably not. I can still remember it, like, in terms of, it was like in slow motion. I had to look across the line again because I was thinking, I must be offside here. Mm-hmm. There's no way, it's because it was just so open. But obviously, Odo in the far right was keeping me onside. Mm-hmm. Which I'm sure we're all happy about to this day. But yeah, for memorable reasons, yes, but in terms of best ever goal, my goal against Man United has to be the one, you know, in terms of technique and awareness and quick thinking to be able to conjure it out of nothing, which it was. It was just a knocked ball back in by Gary Caldwell.
With a head, of course.
And with a big head, yeah. And so many bodies around, so that was a special one for me, and one that I always say to this day is probably my best ever goal.
And that Man United game especially, we held out for about 80 minutes or so.
Yeah.
But the
so gutting as well. I mean,
the pressure was relentless.
As a centre forward as well, when you score the one goal, you always want it to be the winner from a selfish perspective, because obviously it will go down in memory in a better light as well. So we'll be talking about that as a victory for Celtic and another famous, you know, European night, whereas it was just a one-all draw now. Mm-hmm. You know, so from that perspective, I was a wee bit gutted when we conceded the goal so late on. I think I came off and Ben Hutchison had come on that night.
He did.
And I'll never forget, like, the manager coming on after the game and going, oh, well, you know, we're really struggling because we had to bring on our eighth choice striker. Honestly, I've never seen someone's jaw hit the floor so hard, you know, and then the wee man. And Ben Hutchison's, I felt so sorry for him at the time. But Gordon had that ability to just be able to shoot you down in a sentence. You know, we were all at one stage or another, you know, put under that from Gordon. You know, he just had a way with his words to put you in your place at the right times, you know, and sometimes maybe not the right time.
Who got it in the net the most from Gordon's drive? Was it most likely McGeady?
I think there was always a to and a fro with that one. Yeah. I think the two of them, in terms of, I wouldn't say they're similar people, but they have similar traits, and they don't back down, and they have their own beliefs, and they're very strong-minded individuals. Not to say that I'm not either, but deep down, I think everyone else looking in that change room, including Gordon, knew that we needed Aidan, you know, a lot, you know, for our football club. But what he was asking of Aidan was just to give us more, in terms of, it's not your ability when you have it, but when you don't have it, I expect certain things, and he expected that from the whole team across the board. Yeah, I think because he knew Aidan's talents as well, not that Aidan would see that for what it is, in terms of he was only trying to get more out of him. Now, yeah, there was probably a personality clash as well, and they just didn't get on in the end, but you've got to look at it from a perspective of whether they liked each other or not. It still worked, and probably Aidan's best years at Celtic were at those moments, you know, and certainly got the best out of him.
Came back to go against Milan. You had the legend that is Ram McHenry run on the pitch.
That was his name,
Ram McHenry. Tap Dida. Now at the time, it looked very serious with the game and everything, and it looked like, you know, Dida took a soul one, it was an assault.
Yeah.
See, after you saw that footage, was that just laughed at in the dressing room? You must have had somehow.
No, to start with, we were laughing at it, and then obviously you start hearing the stories and you're thinking, oh shit, actually this could be serious, we could get done the 3 points here. Mm-hmm. You know, for the qualification, in terms of that, you're kind of worried that something daft's going to happen here, because you just never know your way for what they're like and what they could do. You know, there could be sanctions, could be points taken off you. So for a little while there, we started to get a little bit worried in terms of, you know, what it might mean. But obviously, you know, it didn't touch him. You know, it was ridiculous how he went down. I think, I'm sure, which I've mentioned in other things, is I'm sure there was someone went to the Milan training ground after and more or less gave Dida an Academy Award. They gave it that. They have this thing where they have to drive through after games, I think, and they stop for media and pictures. And the guy gave him like an award. He wasn't too best pleased, I can tell you. He just drove straight off. But yeah, it was an Academy Award moment, wasn't it? It was ridiculous. But obviously at the time we didn't know that was going on, because obviously you're just celebrating, and all you can just remember is the massive stampede coming towards you. Mm-hmm. And you thought it was a good idea going over to the corner of going to the fan, and then when you see everyone, you're like, holy shit, I need to get out of here. You know, because people started going over the billboards and everything. It was just pure chaos. But what a moment, fantastic moment. The place was absolutely rocking at the time as well. It was just, you can still remember it, you know, frame by frame, you know, in terms of, you know, that night. It was just incredible.
And in that first season, 25 league goals and 36 appearances, two back-to-back hat-tricks as well. It all could have been for nothing though, especially when you missed that penalty in that game against Rangers. I mean, talk us through that one. What was going through your head? Because at the time as well, just where I was sitting at what, 1-2, I was furious. But I remember you set up Big Jan for the header, and it must have been the amount of relief in those last 15 minutes you must have had in that game.
Yeah, well, it was a crazy game. Obviously, Nakamura scored that fantastic goal to start with. He had a great game that night. Obviously, the penalty came from Naka twisting someone inside out and putting one in the top corner of Carlos Queller. Right. Obviously, saving it. But I remember when the penalty was given, everyone was looking at each other and going, right, who's taking it? No one was really putting their hand up at the time. No, I think it was like, Naki, you taking it? Nah. Jan, you taking it? Nah. And then it was Gaz Caldwell who went like, got the ball. We, man, you're taking it? Yeah. And I was like, right, okay. And I just spotted it. Unfortunately, McGregor, he'd seen probably my previous penalties, which I'd put him to that side that year. And it's probably a good save, but still, you know, I think he hurt his ankle at the time as well.
Yeah.
With saving that, probably thankfully for us, the rest of the campaign he was out, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think for the next 5 minutes, I could have been anywhere else in the world at that point. I just did that. For the 5 minutes, I'm thinking, holy shit, this is it now. I've gave everyone exactly what they wanted here for a long time. All the doubters now are finally gone. We've got you. This is you. Because it was obvious that we need to win that game to have any chance of sort of staying in the league title race. So, as you can imagine, what was going through my mind at that time, you know, in terms of, that's the moment I just didn't want to give someone, you know, those doubters. So it took me about 5 minutes to sort of get my head round again, get back on the game. And yeah, obviously you're just trying. Thankfully for me, I wasn't trying too hard, you know. I still relaxed myself, kept myself going, and I just remember obviously Gaz getting the ball. I can still remember it so well, and I peeled off on Stephen Whittaker at right back and just made sure I had my body in the way of anything that was going to come, because I knew Gaz, you know, would play that ball, you know, quite a lot. Mm-hmm. In terms of even in training or in games a lot, we used to look for the second striker, and I kind of knew I needed to get my body in the way of him to make sure that I could get above him, obviously being smaller, and sure enough it was a perfect sort of type of ball, and managed to use my body, get my big arse out and stick it in and get above him, and obviously the rest, as we know, Big Jan was there, and it was, I think you can see from the replays itself, I think it cuts to me. And Jan's ran that way. I was just like, just a sense of relief, like just joy and relief, like going, thank fuck for that. You know, I've got myself out. I've dug myself out a massive hole here. And obviously to get the victory, it was great, because I don't know what that would have done for me in terms of my confidence as well. Albeit, I mean, I was having an unbelievable season in terms of goals, and everything that I was doing was seemed to turn to gold. But from that moment, if we hadn't won that game as well, it would have looked like, you know, the league probably would have been lost. So it was a massive moment within the title race. I think we had a few of them, you know, that year. It was a crazy, you know, special year, and just thankfully it all turned out quite well.
And Tannadice now, that'll be 10 years on for that next May, and well, no, it was the 1-0-1 Big Jan. But what was the relief like after all that, after that mental season, and was a massive after party and everything?
I think you got it right. It was a sense of relief, more than anything. I think when you play for Celtic, it's all about winning things, you know, at the end of the day. You can have great individual moments, but you're remembered for the things you win more than anything else. So for me personally, that was the longest week of my life leading up to that. It was just every day, just couldn't sleep and so nervous. Remember, we stayed at Carnoustie the night before. Gordon had contacts up there. We ended up training during on the day, and honestly, the session was the worst session I've ever seen. The boys were all over the place. I just couldn't control it, and I think everyone's mind was just right. Just get this game done.
Yeah.
Just get it done. Let's get there. And I think that the game itself, you know, at Tannadice, it was a nervy affair, yeah, especially you know early on. I think big Mark De Vries, I think Lee Neal ended up passing the ball square, playing Mark De Vries in, and he missed a one-on-one, and it was just like, oh, holy shit, thank God they missed that. And it was really cagey, and then all of a sudden you hear, you couldn't help but hear, you know, obviously what was going on up the road.
Yeah.
And they went one down, and I think that just brought a whole sense of relief to everyone, fans, players, a lot. We actually started playing, we started passing it, got a couple of good moments of attack, and got that set piece, and, you know, Paul put it in, and Jan did the business once again, and it was a fantastic night, and for special reasons as well, obviously, you know, being obviously the year that, that Tommy passed as well, you know, it was a special moment, and you know, from that point of view as well, it was quite emotional.
Where was the after party after that that night? Because it must have been not just one night, you must have had a few days.
Oh yeah, yeah, we did. The after party was in Cushing. Right. That night, everyone was still in their tracksuits. We just, because obviously it was a long drive from Tannadice back down the road. Good banter on the way down. Boys were singing a bit of karaoke on the way down on the mic, and then it was just, it was a great moment. Obviously, when we got to Celtic Park though, because there was thousands, you know, at the front, and we managed to obviously we had the trophy and lifted the trophy there, and I've still got, I think camera phones were just about at that point, so I've still got a couple of photos hanging about somewhere, but it was just amazing. It was just, honestly, I put it up there with the birth of my kids. It was just like that amazing feeling, and you're just on such a high. And I know probably some would probably say I was on a high for about 6 weeks because of the condition I came back in, but they're probably right looking back. But yeah, I had a good time, that's for sure. And then it went into the early hours. I think we ended up at the casino down by the quayside, and it just kicked up. I don't think a lot of the boys went to bed, and ended up being back down in the West End at like 1 o'clock, and just kicked on for the rest of the day. It was a mad couple of days, but I think once you've had such a hard season like that, it's not bad way to be able to let the hair down afterwards, you know.
Massively agreed. You were talking about the condition you came back in. That was one thing I wanted to talk about in this defeated 08-09 season, because you got a new 5-year contract you signed, and then you came back, and apparently, now the thing is, if you came back looking like me, I would get it, right?
Yeah.
But it was still not that bad. But did you think it was blown out of proportion a bit?
I think though you have to expect that when you play for a big club. You know, you have to accept those expectations, and people always looking at you. Look, Wayne Rooney's had it throughout his career as well. Now I'm not putting myself on par with that, but in terms of body shapes, I'm probably at times similar. At that time as well, I was a lot less educated. And the other thing probably was my downfall was that certain things I was doing in the 07-08 season, I wasn't doing anything different leading up to the 08-09 season. But you still have to maintain it. I think probably I didn't maintain a level of fitness throughout the summer. But when everything's going so well as well, you sort of neglect other sides of things, and it's accepted. And I think Gordon was always one as well that you didn't have to have excellent amount of body, you know, body fat, or get it down reduced. If you were doing the business on the park, then he was happy. If you weren't, then obviously there's issues when you get fit. And there's no question for me, I could have been a lot fitter, even my whole career at Celtic. But you only know that now because of your experience, and more so when I went down to England, I'll be honest, in terms of the reality check it gave me in terms of the athleticism and the physicality of when I went to the Championship, and realised actually here I probably have to get fitter I need to look after my body. But and I think as well, you're still growing up, you're still maturing, you're still a young lad going out, having a good time. Whereas then I started to get settled, have a family, you focus on a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. Ended up changing a lot within my diet, and obviously that's allowing me now to still play and hopefully play for another good couple of years. I'm definitely, as you can see, I think a lot of people were a bit shocked when I come back up the road. Yeah. To say, oh, wait a minute, look at him. You know, because there is definitely a difference in my body shape. So from that question, yeah, it was, when I look back, I'm a little bit disappointed with that, because I feel as if that, if I hadn't done that, I may have been able to have done something different with my game as well. But with the good side of it, actually, the extra body weight at times allowed me, because I've found that when I've, you know, lost the body weight, because I'm probably now stone lighter than what I was at Celtic, mm-hmm. which is incredible. But it allowed me to go in bully centre backs, bigger 6 foot heavy guys that, you know, when they came shoulder to shoulder, that there was no messing. I could really, you know, sort of mm-hmm. use that extra weight to my advantage and roll people, and that would be the difference now. You know, I wouldn't be able to do that. I'd have to find other, you know, different ways to get around them.
Well, you've just brought up one there about a footballer's diet. What was your diet like in a typical day at Celtic 10 years ago compared to now? Because I have got I love hearing about what footballers eat and everything.
Yeah, do you know what? Do you know what the bad thing was like at Celtic at that time? Like, even as a football club, like, we'd have cans of Coke, like, in the lunchroom. Mm-hmm. Or you would get on the team bus.
The Golden Stripe was alright, wasn't it?
I mean, yeah, I mean, but it was just a thing that, like, yeah, it wasn't like, a lot of the boys wouldn't take it, but if it was there, some would, mm-hmm. you know? So there was iron brews, Coke, Mars bars. It's just, you would never see it this day on Earth. You'd be like, and even if I was looking at someone, I'm going, what the are you doing eating that? You know, because the education of it now, I'd be like, you can't be eating that on a Friday, you know, the day before again, because you get on the team bus to travel up on the, and there would just be all sorts of like stuff like that on the bus. Or I'll be honest with you, I probably ate too well because the food was that good. And the next time the chef was amazing. Honestly, it was like you would come in and there was like a little board in the morning that would tell you exactly. Honestly, there was like three different dishes. It was like going to a restaurant. You know, you cook your steak, you say, how would you like your steak? Mm. So you're having like a three course meal at lunchtime. It's just ridiculous, you know? In terms of all I've done now is, obviously, you learn, you eat a lot less carbs, right. More protein, cut a lot of sugar out of your diet in terms of the fizzy stuff or chocolates or, you know, just certain things that earlier on in your career, you would just munch them and munch them. You would sit in front of the telly. What would be the first thing you would do? You would talk. You'd go and grab something. Or you'd be on the PlayStation or the Xbox, you know. But things like that change as well when you're, because as you get older as well, you have a family and you haven't got the time to mm-hmm. to do those certain things. So other things as well help you out in terms of, you know, having the families and being kept busy all the time. You haven't got the time on your hands anymore to sit around. Because when you're a young lad, the first thing you're always last in and first out the door.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just, you still see it to this day, a lot of young players. You know, they'll be last in, you know, be told to come in for 10 o'clock, they'll be in for 2 minutes to 10, and then as soon as training finished, they're off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no extra work, you know. That's changing now as well, because a lot of it's now, it's, even at Dundee United, you have to do your session, obviously your training session, and then there'll be gym sessions and yoga sessions put on for the whole team. So there'll be no, mm-hmm. it's not that you don't trust individuals enough to do it, but it's better as a collective to make sure that they're in there and getting it done. So a lot of things are a lot better, even 10 years on. Mm-hmm. It's crazy stuff. So.
And I take it as normal cans of Coke and brew at Tannadice, no?
Certainly not, no. And I wouldn't imagine there would be a Celtic anymore, even though Browning might still have a fight with the manager if that's not the case, in terms of like what it was like with Ronnie Dyla with the ketchup.
And your goal at Ibrox, mm-hmm. it's all clear, getting into the new year, and then there was rumours saying all we needed was one more striker, Stephen Fletcher. Now, I don't know, for some reason Celtic decided not to purchase him. Yeah. But a lot of people said that was a defining moment in that race, because we only had yourself, Jan, and Giorgio Samaras, but we needed that fourth striker in. Do you agree with that? Did you think that was a big part of that season going on?
Yes and no. I do agree with it because at that time, well, afterwards, when we look back, Big Yan and Sammy were nowhere to be seen because they had injuries. They were injured for a lot of that second half of the season. I think even leading up to the January window, I think Yan was out for quite a big patch. So we were needing someone else to sort of take the weight off me a little bit in terms of the goal scoring. It's funny though, because that season I might not have scored as many goals, but actually my all round game was a lot better. Mm-hmm. You know, from a personal point of view and how I was playing, keeping the ball and doing things that not necessarily did in the first season. But there was a lot of, the manager felt there was a lot of reliance on myself, to get the goals in the end, because just the other two couldn't get enough, game time. They were, I think Sammy had a knee op, a clean out or something, and then obviously Big Yan, I can't remember his ones, I think it was his hamstrings more than anything else, but yeah, and obviously Stephen Fletcher, as we know now, mm-hmm. was a very good talent at that time, and he's gone on to have a fantastic career, and I think it would have been a very good signing for Celtic Football Club, and it would have made a statement of intent. Mm-hmm. I think always in January you're looking for that lift, just like the 07 one where we brought in Andy Hinkle and Barry Robson. It gives you just that little injection, and a lift as a team itself, and we didn't really do that in that January. And I think even from the manager's perspective, I think he was disappointed that we didn't get Stephen Fletcher. Mm-hmm. I think he really was. I think it was there for us, but I kind of think it was political upstairs in terms of the transfer fee, and the messing about with that. And unfortunately, it just didn't happen. So we had to make do. But even in saying that, we still should have won the league. I look back at that, and I still have horrors about second last game of the season.
Hibs,
yeah,
right. Because Bob Jones is the one that kills me every time. We punted balls in the air.
But it was 0-0. If we won that game, we were in the ascendancy to win the league. The last game of the season, playing at Celtic Park against Hearts. So from that point of view, when we drew that game, I kind of felt the league was lost. I could feel it, after that game, that we kind of lost the league on that day, because playing Hearts at home on the last day of the season, I think we would have steamrolled them. I really do. But as it was, it's probably my worst experience as a Celtic player that day. It was horrible in terms of at Celtic Park and the atmosphere. And nothing to do with the fan. It was just like a morgue. Everyone was just like, it was the lowest of all lows. And you really felt that as a player as well. And realised that Gordon was leaving as well from a player perspective. I know maybe some fans were happy, but he was so good to me and so good to the group. The group really bought into what Gordon was and what it was about. Obviously, we were his players. So from that perspective, it was even more disappointing that we couldn't finish, on a high for him as well.
So when Gordon did leave and Tony Mowbray came in, I'm going to go into that a wee bit later on about what you said about him not being on your wavelength, but what was your initial impressions of Tony Mowbray when he came in? What did he do different to Gordon Strachan?
Do you know what? Any manager who's going to come in, it's always going to be positive, but it's like, need to impress, So you were back on it again, obviously, with the new manager coming in, the comfortability factor had gone, so you had to be ready. So my first dealings with Tony was, we had a conversation. I'd been away with the national team, and our first pre-season game was obviously in Australia. So I met up with a group in Australia rather than coming all the way back, because I used to go home all the time. We met, they only had 2 or 3 days pre-season at Lennox Town and then came over. And everything was very good, very positive. He gave me the armband for that game as well, which was quite nice of him. And you're thinking, this is great, good feeling about the place. You could tell that the boys were buzzing, different type of football. In terms of how he wanted to structure the team, and you could sort of sense, though, from my perspective, things were starting to get built around you rather than with you. And I just didn't like it, as you're not going to, because the last 2 seasons you've been top scorer at the football club. Mm-hmm. You feel as if you're an important part of that squad now, and in terms of what he was wanting and wanting to focus his team around was more the wide players being narrow on the pitch and being a dominant force within the team and making us play pretty in terms of Sean Maloney and Aidan McGeady were the two main factors that he loved. He loved that type of technical player. Still does, Tony. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, obviously, looking back now, with my time with Tony, there's a lot of good things that he implemented and things that I would now look at and go, yeah, they're types of things that I would possibly use within the structure of my team itself. But at the time, as a younger player with an individual mindset, there's only one thing on your mind, and it's what's good for you. Mm-hmm. And it, as it progressed, it didn't feel like it was good for me. And everything was fine up until the point where he started to, well, he brought me into his office and asked me a couple of questions just about me, and I was like, well, why are you asking me this for? Surely you know, or you've done your homework. Why are we having to outlay this now in a conversation, or have me, you know, uncomfortably tell you, you know, what my strengths and weaknesses are? I don't really want to go into that, and I don't know how to gauge that, because are you asking me, is this a test, or is this, you know, is this for real, or what? And in the end, the conversation went, well, I don't think you do this, and I don't think you do that, and I don't think you do this. I was like, right, okay. And then I walked out the door. So a lot of it was on a negative balance once I left. So I was thinking, what's that all about? You know, it's one thing telling me what I'm not good at, and I don't mind that because I need to improve. That's fine, but there's ways and means of going about it. And I just felt from then I wasn't going to be one of the players that he relied on or thought would be an important, integral part of his team. But again, I didn't give him an option, because every time he played me, I scored. Right. So he had a problem. He had a problem in terms of he wanted to change it, but he couldn't. Because every time he did, it wouldn't work, and then you would come on and you would change it. So all of a sudden he had a massive dilemma. And there was a conversation that was had. We had a team talk, because we used to stay at Hilton before every home game, and actually he was the first manager I actually had that brought in sort of like, you know, you would do all all the homework on the other team. He would do the video analysis, shape, set pieces, so we would do that all before, obviously we'd go and play them on the Saturday morning. And then we would get on the team bus. So we all finished that. I went to the toilet. Everyone else had gone on the team bus. And there's a fire exit we used to go down. So I'm at the top of the stairs, and he's down the bottom of the stairs, and he's talking to Marco Fortuny at the time.
Right.
The conversation sort of went, and look, there's two ends of every stick. And now that I'm a bit older, I can see what he was doing. But at that time, it was only one thing on my mind that he was saying there, more or less. Once he stops doing what he's doing, you're in the team. I fancy you more than him, but we need to wait, because I can't just bin him. Because
did he know you were at the top?
No, we didn't know. We didn't know.
Right.
But I let it be known that I was there at the end. I didn't say anything, but I just walked down, and it was quite an awkward moment for everyone. But yeah, from that moment on, me and him, we just weren't going to get on, because I just felt like it wasn't like. He's a manager, so he's not undermining you, but at the same time, you're not his player. So that's just how it felt for me. And that stuck with me throughout that whole period.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a lot of other things going on within that era. And for reasons, you can't go to the press and be so honest, you know, as a manager, when you're a Celtic manager or a Rangers manager for that, because you'll get burned at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Sometimes, as much as it frustrated fans like yourself, where Gordon would come out and say, team was excellent today, we had 20 crosses, we had 10 shots on target, you know, it was a great performance, and you'll be sitting there going, is he talking about?
Yes.
He's talking nonsense. Right? But what that does for the changing room, you will never see, is in terms of the reaffirmation of what he's given the team and his confidence within the squad and the group. Now, don't get me wrong, what he's saying out there and what you're hearing is completely different to what he's saying within the change room. But that was the important thing. He had a front for everyone, protected his players, come back in the change room, told us exactly what he really felt,
mm-hmm.
and we had to get on with it. right? But that always stayed within that changing room.
Because, I mean, the papers couldn't then say, let's fire and make the
be negative. It only gets negative when you start doing that, when you're too honest. So it becomes a negative press about your players, individuals, and then that becomes unsettled within the group, and then confidence gets affected. We had this sort of bubble built around us that no one could really infiltrate or penetrate while we were there with Gordon. He would always protect you, and you would always feel, you know, that confidence within the group. And whether or not you had a bad weekend, you lost a game, the Mondays, everything was lifted. It'd be picked up. Gordon, his staff, Tommy Burns, Gary Pendry, Neil Lennon when he come in, they all had a way about them where they could lift the group. They were fantastic at brushing it under the carpet. Right, let's go again. You know, and that felt like that was lost. And we were getting, not undermined, but self, there was a lot of doubt within the group itself that we weren't good enough now. You know, it was all like, well, I need 10 new players. I think that was one of the headlines that come out. Now, whether or not he meant that, players see that. Players read papers back then a lot more than probably what you would now, but, you know, and boys would be coming in and be unsettled. So someone would come in and go, you fucking read that or what? And the boys would be like, what are you talking about? What he said in the press? Now, he might not have said it like that, but the press are going to pick up on it.
Yeah.
And there's a couple other incidents where we played Falkirk away in the League Cup, and we ended up winning 5-1, but it was a horrendous performance. It was terrible. I mean, we couldn't put two passes together. But that was confidence within the players in the group, because you felt undermined, a little bit self-doubted by him, and you weren't good enough to do what he was asking. Now, maybe you weren't, but there's ways and means about getting the best out of your players, and he just didn't understand how to do that with that group. And it was very difficult, probably looking for him as a manager, coming into a strong-minded, with a lot of characters of a group that had so much success under another manager, and you kind of want them to change the philosophy of the way that the club plays, and to have all that group still there and to change their minds. So I can see why you want to change it, but everything has to happen in stages. You can't just come in overnight and change it. And I think that's where you got it wrong. And I'll go back to that Falkirk game. So we come in after the game and it's like, oh, it was terrible, you know. Now, fair enough, but we won 5-1. So sometimes you just have to go, right, fair enough. But the statement was that when I get you playing the way we want to play next year, we'll be beating teams like this 10-0.
But disrespectful to the other team as well, though, isn't it?
Yeah. We're all looking at each other going, like, has he been here in the middle of January at Falkirk? When we just have to grind out a result when the wind's swirling, the pitch is soggy. It doesn't always work out that way. You know, in terms of referring to them as a bottom of the championship type of team, they're not even as good as that. It was very, a lot of it was very disrespectful in terms of what other teams were about, and I just couldn't understand that, especially if he'd been at Hibs already. He'd played for Celtic as a player. He knew how hard it was to win every week. Mm-hmm. You can't play well every week, you know, unfortunately, not unless you're the Invincibles, but who seem to be doing that pretty well. But it was all about grinding the games out at times, no matter if you were good, bad or indifferent, because you knew the other lot, they were winning.
Yeah.
So, and that's the difference from then to today, that it's hard to make comparisons in terms of playing in that pressure cooker of the other team winning, and then you're having to win as well on a Sunday. It was every week, the balance was always there. So, and I think that the next time we went to Falkirk, we ended up drawing 3 each.
It did, yeah, I mean, it was a Sunday, wasn't it? Terrible game.
So, you know, it was one of them where, there you go, you know, you can't always play this amazing, pretty football that we wanted. You just needed to get the results. People don't remember the performances at the end of the day. You know, they might moan about it at the time, but as long as you've got 3 points in the bag, we move on to the next one.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the key of being successful, I felt.
Regarding your January 2010 departure, after you said that, now it's a no-brainer when you left, but did you have to reach out to Gordon, or did he already was here?
He had a conversation with the football club itself. He was already in talks about taking Barry Robson and Gary Caldwell. They were deals that were going to get done because they were in the last year of their deals. So there was whispers about that early on, before the window opened, that was obviously going to happen, that those two were going to go. As much as even Tony probably wanted to keep these players, but in terms of the financial packages of what everyone was was getting down the road, it was by far a lot better than what the terms were at Celtic. So in terms of everyone that was leaving, they were going for those types of reasons rather than anything else, albeit it was with Gordon. And they were the reasons why I went, was because I had a manager who believed in me, which I felt for the last 6 months I didn't have. I had a manager that brought me all the success that I've had up until that point, brought the best out of me, and I had a belief in him as a manager and as a person as well, to get things right at Middlesbrough and we would be successful to get promoted. And with all those things plus the financial package, it was a no-brainer for me at the time, you know, because of how I felt. There was a lot of emotion involved in it, you know, for me. Now, looking back, I probably moved too early. I would have liked a little bit longer at Celtic. Now, to say that you don't know how long you're going to last as a player at Celtic, you know, from each year it changes, especially as a centre forward, because you have to score goals, maintain a performance level. So whether it was then or maybe 6 months or 18 months down the line, it probably would have happened within that period anyway. I would have probably left. But as it was, with the emotion involved, probably jumped the gun a little bit too soon. But for all the right reasons, I felt, you know, at that time, and it was a sad day actually to leave the football club. And I remember I'd signed my deal at Middlesbrough, and I think I was out for a meal, and Sky Sports News was on. And I was quite disappointed by it, and a bit heartbroken about. But someone had more or less like basically put a black marker through my name and put Keane on top of it, and I was just like, that's how quickly you've forgotten.
Yeah.
You know? And I can understand, because Robbie Keane was an excellent player and I would have loved to have played with him, but it was just like, you're quickly forgotten. And that was a bit sore, because you loved being a part of, you know, that whole, you know, attention and pressure cooker. I loved the pressure. Playing it a lot better, and then I went from that to, at the time, unfortunately, Middlesbrough were on a sort of downward spiral where a lot of the fans had sort of been disenchanted, and we ended up playing in front of like 13,000, 14,000, 35,000 seat stadium trying to get promoted, and it was just like, I've been playing in front of 60,000 for the last 2.5 years, playing in European nights trying to win titles, and we're at this now. Irrelevant of what money I'm on, this isn't what I want. You know, it was very difficult to then be able to perform at a level and to be able to enjoy your football.
When we were speaking to Gary Colbert, we said that, because he was just to be playing, winning every week, playing in front of big crowds. He moved to Wigan, who then, with all due respect, were always in a relegation dogfight and they didn't have the fans. But he said what he helped to do was create a winning mentality at the club and just create a different atmosphere, slowly and surely, because he had the standards that I think the manager at the time wanted him to lead by example. Did Gordon ever say that to you, to bring that to Middlesbrough?
We couldn't do that. I think it was very difficult as well, because the jocks came in town, you know, so there was too many of us infiltrated the football club itself. I think, looking back, in my personal opinion, Gordon signed too many of us, whether it being from Celtic and from Rangers. There was too many of us that didn't know enough about that league itself and what it takes to get out of the league. In terms of what was already at the football club at Middlesbrough, there was a lot of money getting thrown about. There was a lot of players on, a lot of money. Like, there's got Didier Digard, people would be going, who? He was on like 50 grand a week in the Championship, you know? We had Mido on 55 grand a week. We had all these players who didn't really care. So to try and create a winning mentality with players that are getting so much money, whether they win, lose or draw, how can you infiltrate that? You can't. You're not playing in the Premier League trying to survive in the best league in the world. You're trying to get to it. So you need a certain type of player to get you there, and you need certain type of players that have had experience and enabled to, like I said to you about even at Celtic, because it is about winning every week. You have to grind the results out. We didn't have that tough mentality at the club, and we couldn't get it. And then the whole thing, when it's incredible, because I remember the last conversation I had with Tony was, right, thanks very much for everything, because everything was amicable at the end of the day. You never sort of like to leave things on a sour note, whether or not we seen eye to eye, it was fine. But he was like, well, it's a great club, it's my home club, and you never know, could be a manager again one day. That's exactly my, that's exactly what I did. I was like, I wouldn't mind that, it would be fine. And sure enough, a year later, what happened? How's your Donald Duck? Yeah, so, but our relationship grew in our time together at Middlesbrough because it was a longer time. There was good and bad, don't get me wrong, it was like a, it's like a marriage in terms of there was a lot of fallout as well as, you know, good times, but in the end, again, when me and Tony made for each other, it was quite odd as well. I know I'm going off track, but it was kind of odd that a chairman who, a great chairman at Middlesbrough Football Club, passionate about his club, puts so much money into it, that after spending so much money on all these players from Scotland who Gordon brought in, and a lot of them came from the club that Tony was, to leave him, that they gave him the job. And it was, I know he was a local, and I think it was more heart over head with that one, in terms, because he was a local guy that he gave him the job. But I just thought, how is this going to work with everyone on 3, 4, 5 year contracts, that you're bringing in a manager that didn't have a relationship with these players already? Yes. It was completely bonkers.
That was bonkers,
you know.
And one of the players who joined the Middlesbrough with yourself was Steve McManus.
Yeah.
You played with him at Celtic as well, and then you went to join him at Motherwell.
Yeah.
What was it like playing with him at Celtic when he was also the captain, and then when he was at Motherwell? Because you had the same sort of career.
Yeah.
What was it like with him?
It's so weird because we're best of mates now. To say, were we anything but teammates at Celtic? Probably not, no. He was my captain, he was my leader. Did we conversate much, or did we have much in common? Did we socialise outside of, you know, Lennoxdown? No, certainly not. You know, it wasn't until we went to Middlesbrough, where obviously you're in unfamiliar territory, different surroundings. I think it was the first time that Stephen and his family had obviously been away from home, like a lot of the boys. So it was different for them as well, and they sort of, we attached each other to one another, as you would. And from then we built a fantastic relationship together, as obviously as friends, and continue to do so. But he was great. He was fantastic captain. Just overall, one of the most genuine people I've ever met, you know, in life, never mind football, especially in football. You know, you'll never get a more loyal or honest person. And I think that showed in the way that, you know, Big Mick played his football as well. Obviously, we had the conversation about his retirement. You know, I was one of the ones that he confided in. I was hugely disappointed, because it's sad whenever you see your teammates like him or even Sean retiring. Sort of shows your age as well. But they were great talent, you know, not just for Celtic, but good footballers, and, you know, for Scotland, and had great careers. And you always think there's probably still more within, you know, the engine to go, but he just felt the time was right, and I'm happy for him that he's happy. You know, I think that's the main thing when you retire, that you've got to be happy with your decision, and he is.
And a couple of years ago, it was in the playoff for Motherwell, the two of you played against Rangers, and for two Celtic fans, playing against Rangers, a shadow of the Rangers, what it used to be, was that no weird? Because you must have been there as favourites, because before that game, it was like a capacity crowd at Ibrox for the first leg.
Yeah,
but I think everyone knew that this wasn't the Rangers team that it was all it used to be seen before.
Even so, and I think, because I was staying with Steve at the time, I was staying at his house when I came up, because I only came up in the March. So he'd returned him a long favour from when he was down at Middlesbrough, staying at mine. God, that's why our relationship's so strong, because I think we lived together for about 2 years solid, just inside out. We were like a marriage, honestly. Our two wives are just like that. Used to just live together, and we'll live together, you know, because just like always together. But I remember both of us saying after the game and before the game even, that this was the biggest game we've played in since we left Celtic.
Mm-hmm.
It really was. You know, the atmosphere, the intensity, the pressure cooker of it, and what was on the line, you know, in terms of, even more so for realistic reasons, you know, at a club like Motherwell Football Club, there was people's jobs on the line. You know, like good friends of ours, you know, worked in ticket offices, and you know, just within the football club, had been at the club for, you know, so many years. You know, so to have that weight on your shoulders as well was a big thing, you know. And obviously you enjoyed the results, but it was just a sense of relief again that, oh, thank God we did what we set out to do here, and we stayed up and we're safe, and allows this football club now to hopefully build foundations to go on. I didn't think I was going to come back after that, but it would give them foundations now to go and build again and be safe next year and bring in players and make sure everyone's jobs are secure, because that's how, you know, realism of Scottish football is that now, outside of, you know, probably a couple of clubs, that, you know, jobs are on the line from every year. You know, people that, you know, work so hard for these football clubs in the background, you know, it's their jobs that are on the line, not the players, you know. So from that point of view, more than anything for me, that's why it was such a happy time. You know, the people, seeing those people's faces after that game at Fir Park and the sense of relief and joy, it was great, you know. And it was still nervous because they scored, I think, right at the end of the game at Ibrox. But I've never played in a game where I'm 3-0 up after 46 minutes, looking at the scoreboard, having a couple of names thinking, this is brilliant.
Yeah. Right, so another excel is Mark McGee. Now, he's someone who is a Patter icon, Scottish football, similar Patter icon, a Gig Pod, and his peak was the Aberdeen Pedology video. Yeah. Do you feel Mark McGee's reputation sometimes is a wee bit unjust in that respect, as a comic relief figure? Or?
Yeah, I was going to say a little bit as a joke figure. Yeah, I think so. Until you get to know the man, I suppose. A lot of people, I mean, him and Gordon are very good friends, and I think they're both misunderstood people at times, but obviously the persona that they give off is what, you know, as an impression of what people are going to see. But in terms of as a person, Mark's probably the best man manager I've ever had in my career.
Yeah,
for late on. And his ideas within the game at times can seem a bit crazy, but more times than not, they come off, you know. So it was an absolute pleasure to play under in the last couple of years. And obviously, I was sad to see, obviously, when he left. You know, he was so good to me on a lot of levels, and really loyal, that, you know, I was hugely disappointed that, obviously, when the club made the decision to do what they did, to let him go, it sort of left a bit of a, you know, massive hole for me as a player at the football club. Partly one of the reasons why I left, partly one of the reasons why I stayed in the January window. In fact, probably the biggest reason why. You know, so to see him leave, I really hope he, you know, still has another chance in the game, whether it's up in Scotland or elsewhere. But like I said, a great, great guy. Again, knew how to, you know, keep a changing room positive, get the best out of his players, and really just a really, really good guy in general. When he walked into a room, he could hold it. You know, for me, that speaks volumes, in terms of when you're a manager, if you can do that and hold the respect. And people forget what a good player he was as well. Some career he had as well. It wasn't until obviously he came to the football club that I started to do a bit of digging myself, and the clubs that he played for is just unbelievable. You know, the experiences that he has within the game. So to you know, get into his brain about, you know, some of those things was quite, you know, things that I'll hold. You know, it was great for me, you know, in terms of where I'm going. So you know, from that perspective, I still keep in touch with him now. He's still funny as ever. You know, someone that I'll look to keep in touch with for, you know, out with the days when I'm finished. You know, and there's not a lot of ex-managers that probably you would say that you would do that with, but Mark's certainly one of them.
And do you think that Pedro video, the footage up there with him, with the fans, where he was getting abuse, how much of a role did that play for him, just going, I'm scunnered with Scottish football? Did that have a big part of it?
It was a difficult time. You know, we'd had a couple of bad results, and obviously going to Pittodrie, where it means so much to him as well, as you would imagine, you know, having the history of what he's had at that football club as a player, and then the disappointing time as a manager there as well, I think it obviously hurt him. But, you know, I said it at the time, and whether it's an Aberdeen fan or any type of fan, you know, I just hate this video phone stuff and hiding behind the video phone and, you know, shouting abuse and swearing at people, and that's what the guy was doing essentially. And it was more or less like, you can't touch me, I'm just going to say what I want to say here as well. Whereas if you're in the middle of the street, would he have done it? I very much doubt it, you know. So from that perspective, and it's very hard, as much as I, you know, looking at it, and it's become I think it was trending on Twitter at one point, you know, that whole video. And I remember I was injured or suspended for that game. I didn't go up, and my phone was just like a hotline. You know, I must have got the video sent through by about 10 different people, you know, as soon as it was done. And it was just, when you look back, obviously from Mark's perspective as well, it's not good. It's not a good view, is it? It's a horrible viewing. But when you get put on the spot like that as well, it's hard to react any other way. You know, when your team is losing as heavily as what they were, I think it was 7-1, and then to get sent to the stand and have a police escort there, and then people trying to mug you off, you put anyone in that position, you're not going to like it, are you?
And then, not only that, but we've read Mark McGee ever since as a Minecraft genius. How much of that is paper talk or true?
No, it's true. He does certain things, and he's always testing you. Always testing you. Like, he was testing me when he first came in. I didn't even realise he was doing it, you know, but everything's a mind game. He plays mind games with everyone. He does certain things, like he'll leave his door like about 5 inches open, you know.
Okay. His house door or his office door?
His office door. So his office door, no, his house door. But he'll leave it open. And that's just a little psychological thing that, well, if I shut it, what will the player do? 9 times out of 10, they'll walk past it. Mm-hmm. They won't come in. But if I leave it open a little bit, then it allows them that little bit of sense of security that they can come in. Just little things like that, which you wouldn't necessarily think of, because I wouldn't either.
Main one of this.
Yeah, but I wouldn't think of that either, but it actually does have a, because I've been there many a time where I've went past, say it was your boss's door, if it's shut, you're like, don't know if I want to knock on that, you might be busy, might not be the right time. But if it's that little bit open, it tells you it's always open. And that's what his message was, my door's always open. You know, so that's why he would do that. That's just one example, you know, but just little things like that, that people, you wouldn't understand until you get told that story. I didn't realise until I was told it as well. It's just like, actually, that's quite clever. You know, he would do things every day. He used to do it all the time. Me, it was just different things, you know. Like, he dropped me for a couple of games when he first came in, and that was just to see my type of character.
Yeah.
He'd obviously heard things and wanted to see what my reaction would be like, and it wasn't necessarily that it wasn't fancy. You know, he was just playing mind games.
Mm-hmm.
And he was, but thankfully I passed him.
And finally now you're at Dundee United chasing promotion, and is that the goal for you for the rest of your career?
Of course it is, yeah. I mean, it's vitally important as a football club again that, you know, we get up this year. Again, like I talked about Motherwell, it's very similar. You know, Dundee United had such a successful period, and obviously the likes of Stuart Armstrong, Stephen Shifty, who all went to Celtic, and it's been pretty much a downward spiral for the football club since, you know, those players had left, albeit they got their money for, you know, and their value for their players, but you know, there's been a lot of things gone on since then, and you know, the football club, the fans, you know, it's been a pretty hard time. So hopefully we can bring some good times this year and try and get the club back to, obviously, like, I think we'd all agree where it belongs, another you know a big, you know, football club, you know, within the Scottish game, and get every top club back to the, you know, the top flight, and have these big games and make it even more interesting for the league. We've got the Edinburgh Derby back this year, obviously the Old Firm's back, and then obviously to have the two Dundee sides would be great as well. So hopefully we can do that this year, and like I touched on earlier, for me as an individual perspective, it was more about trying to get the best out of me, you know, come the end of my career, something that I'm going to enjoy, because I think you touched on it with, I can't remember who you talked about just earlier, it was Gaz, about relegations and stuff like that. I've had that now for the last, you know, 3-4 years. I had a couple of years at Millwall with it. Even, albeit the year we finished in the top six with Motherwell, I think for a lot of that season, though, we were down near the bottom because it was that tight, and we ended up getting a run to get in the top six. But it's horrible times, so you just don't want to be a part of that. And call it, you know, a bit like, oh, you don't want to do this or that, but for me, I've done it all, you know. So for me, what would you rather do, and what's your best experiences in the game? And that's winning things. So for me, it's all about that, whether it be a championship medal or anything other. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter. For me now, from a stats point of view, it's about winning, you know. So hopefully I can do that this year.
And what's your future like after football? You'd any thought on it? Personal trainer?
I don't know about that. No. look, there's a lot of things I would like to do. Obviously, I do like the media work. I'm really enjoying doing that. I'm very lucky at the moment that I get to come and watch the hoops quite often, especially in the European games with BBC. So I'm loving doing that sort of radio work. If I could do media work, then it'd be ideal. I love it. I absolutely love it. I would even throw my hand in there to be, you know, a presenter. I'd love to do presenting. That's something I've got a real passion for and would like to get in the mix of that. Not, mind you, I don't know if I'd be as good as Gary Lineker, but you know, that type of role for Scottish football, I think it's still there open, because we have a lot of people outside that haven't played the game do those roles, yeah. But there's not a lot, you know, within the game that do it, so it takes a different type of talent. But you know, I've been in and around media work for, you know, over a decade now to know what goes on and how it would go about. So you need to work at it and you need to get the opportunities. It's like everything, at times you just need the right opportunity. But you know, I wouldn't say that's completely, you know, something I would throw my eggs in one basket at. I mean, I still love the game and I would love to be a manager. You know, coaching, one thing, but you've seen me on the pitch, right? So I like to be in control of everything. That's just that's just how I live my life, you know. Yeah. So I'm a bit of a control freak, OCD freak, and I'd love to be able to be a manager one day and ply my trade against other people. And you know, even like you know, watching games and what Brendan Rodgers is doing now, how would you cope with that? How would you change your team to be able to give him a problem? You know, yeah. So you're always thinking these things now as a senior player, like outside of, you know, just the playing aspects, you know, the coaching side and what you would do in these scenarios and situations. And you know, to ever have an opportunity to be able to do it against people like Brendan Rodgers would be a great thing and something you would get a real good buzz off.
Right. What a best with that, Scott, and thanks a lot for coming on the Gigpod.
No worries, absolute pleasure.
Network.